Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by Isabel Hardman and Katie Balls to discuss the latest developments in the general election campaign. Jeremy Corbyn is today giving a speech about foreign policy, saying that he will appoint a minister for peace if he wins power, but he says he's not a pacifist and would not do any hand-holding with Donald Trump either. Now, Isabel, do you think people are beginning to feel sorry for Jeremy Corbyn? Even the BBC announced today that he was presenting his credentials as a world leader. That even seems to mock him. So do you think the news has got so bad for him with a leaked manifesto that people might be starting to take pity on him?
They might feel sorry for him, but who ever voted for a prime minister who you felt sorry for, particularly when it comes to the subject of defence? And I think the two different speeches that Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn have given today really sum up the differences between their campaigns. The Tories are leading a very aggressive campaign into Labour's heartlands, whereas Jeremy Corbyn's really doing a campaign on his own terms, sticking true to his own principles. And even though in this speech he's saying, "I'm not a pacifist," and he explains circumstances in which he thinks that force is used, although he glosses over that quite quickly, I have to say. He does still stick to his principles, and he still focuses in the speech on actually the need for negotiation, the need for people to talk to one another, which is always the sort of the cop-out argument, basically, saying that suggests that no one's actually tried to talk to one another before conflict happens.
Now, Katie, one of the things that Theresa May is doing today is she's up in the northeast saying that Labour has deserted the working class, and she's denouncing Jeremy Corbyn for 1970s-style socialist policies. How much of a hearing do you think she'll get, and how audacious is she being in her reach into Labour territory?
I think there are some voters who, even if they are completely turned off by Jeremy Corbyn, are ultimately quite tribal and they're just not going to vote Conservative. It's more likely that they abstain, maybe vote UKIP, but they're just not really going to go blue. But there are a lot of voters I think they can clean up, particularly by kind of being so patriotic and being really strong on things like defence, which Corbyn isn't. And we saw today in his speech when he talked about, you know, the relationship of America and how he wanted to almost rewrite that. I think that, again, kind of feeds into this whole idea that he is quite anti-Western.
So, Isabel, if you were running the Tory campaign, what would you recommend Theresa May does? I mean, how daring do you think she can be in trying to take seats of Labour? Because realistically, the Tories can focus on, I don't know, being sort of 50, 75 seats. The big question in every campaign is, how deep into enemy territory do you go?
Well, based on the conversations I've had with Labour MPs across the North East and the North West and the Midlands, in fact, who are defending seats that used to be thought safe, I think the Tories can be pretty bold based on how nervous those MPs are at the moment and on how difficult it is on the doorstep. The number one issue on the doorstep for every MP I've spoken to over the past 2 weeks has been Jeremy Corbyn. It's not local issues, it's not policy issues, it's Jeremy Corbyn. And that means that the Conservatives can be hugely audacious, and their campaign is fitting that because they are making this election a referendum on Jeremy Corbyn, and it's proving hugely effective. And you actually notice in Theresa May's speech in the North East today that she talks about people pledging their loyalty to Labour and saying that these voters haven't deserted Labour, Jeremy Corbyn has deserted them. So she doesn't just make it about Labour, which personally I think is becoming a very toxic brand in and of itself, but she makes it about Jeremy Corbyn because he absolutely is a toxic brand.
Right. And Katie, this has been her style, or Lynton Crosby's style, ever since the campaign began, to talk about not the Conservative Party, but I'm Theresa May and these are my MPs, these are my candidates, me versus Jeremy Corbyn. Do you think that's because she thinks the Labour brand is strong? Isabel's saying it's becoming toxic there, but do you think the Tories are scared that in 2017, as in 2010, the Labour brand might prove to be more durable than they had thought?
Yeah, well, I think the reason that so many Labour MPs who are very disheartened by Jeremy Corbyn as leader haven't jumped ship and formed a new party is because they realise that the Labour Party is still a strong brand. And if you are a different, it's very hard to kind of build that level of brand awareness and brand appeal. But ultimately, if Theresa May sticks on leadership, I mean, Jeremy Corbyn is just such an easy target. Why would you bother looking elsewhere?
And Isabel, the Labour people that you speak to are having such difficulties. What do they most fear about Theresa May's campaign? I mean, do you think that the nationalism card is working, that she's presenting herself as a kind of Brexit warrior princess effectively? Or is it just that, oh, I can't stand Jeremy Corbyn, so I might vote for Theresa May? And also, how far do you think Theresa May is succeeding in presenting herself to people who would otherwise not consider the Conservative Party for reasons of Conservative brand contamination?
As far as I can work out from the conversations I've had with campaigners, is that actually it's how effective Theresa May appears as a politician, that she just appears very no-nonsense and gets on with the job and she seems to get things done. That's a phrase that you hear a lot. Just on the abandonment of the Labour brand, one campaigner I was speaking to said that he gets lots and lots of people saying to him, I don't think I can vote Labour now. I don't think I can. I've voted Labour all my life. But he thinks that that's still quite a soft, I don't think I can vote Labour. And that actually those people are sort of looking for reassurance and saying that, hoping that someone will give them a reason why it's still safe to vote Labour. But that they're asking for reassurance is obviously a very bad sign for them, because it shows that people are starting to consider Labour as the risky option.
Now, Katie, the obvious option for people who don't want to vote Labour and can't quite stomach the Tories is to go for the third party, the Liberal Democrats. So, you know, for a lot of technical reasons, this should be a brilliant time for the Lib Dems. They are unequivocally committed to Remain, a cause which 48% of the country still backs. They don't have the problems that the Labour Party do. So we should be getting some revival of them getting back up from a dozen MPs to about 50 that they had before the last election campaign. But that doesn't seem to be happening. And instead, all we hear from them today is legalising marijuana. I mean, why is Tim Farrellin having such difficulty getting his message out?
Well, I think because they've gone so hard on things like being so pro-EU, it really works among some voters. But to others, like if you are a Labour voter who either voted Brexit or kind of are a Eurosceptic who voted Remain, the Lib Dems also isolate you slightly on the EU because they seem to not want to leave the EU. And I met up with Julian Huppert yesterday, who lost his seat in Cambridge as Lib Dems by like 300 votes. And he's should, by all means, win his seat back. But all these policies, I mean, seem to work really well for an area like Cambridge, which voted 73%, you know, to Remain, full of students who will love this marijuana one. And they seem to be very, like, based for just these areas. They almost look like they're not aiming for places like the West Country, places that they once kind of had a big presence in.
So Lib Dems are kind of positioning themselves as the party for metropolitan liberals. If you like Remain, if you're quite relaxed about marijuana, vote Lib Dem. But they don't seem like the sort of policies that the people Isabel is talking about are going to be very attracted to.
Exactly. And obviously, I don't know what Rachel Johnson's stance on marijuana is, but it's people like that, you know, people who are very prominent and metropolitan who seem to be flocking to the Lib Dems.
Right. Now, Isabel, you know, we've been reading a lot in the Telegraph this week and other papers about Labour people saying, right, we're quite serious now after we lose this election, we've got to move quickly. Do you get the sense that anything will happen for amongst Labour MPs to either split or to try to mount a leadership challenge after what everybody expects will be a rather big election defeat? Or do you think that if the party had the ability to do something like that, it would have done so already and it's run out of options?
I think the options for treatment are getting smaller and smaller and with fewer chances of success as well. You've got the sort of Yvette Cooper strand of thinking, which you see Yvette Cooper and Rachel Reeves and a few other MPs who are clearly positioning themselves for leadership bids after the election. But I think you've got a lot more MPs who are thinking, this party is broken. What on earth are we going to do next? They look at the polls of the membership. They look at the way that members react both in their local parties and on social media. And actually, I think social media is probably quite a good indicator of where the Labour membership is. It's not a very good indicator of where the electorate is, but in terms of the Labour membership, it is quite useful. And the members are much more likely to blame the Parliamentary Labour Party and the mainstream media than they are ever to acknowledge that Jeremy Corbyn will have been responsible for a bad Labour election defeat. And when you're in that situation, it's very difficult, unless you have a membership transplant, which is going to be difficult. Actually, you have to start thinking about, is this time for a new party? And that's going to take a very long time to set up and has all sorts of risks attached of people setting up parties that they'd like to see exist in politics rather than that the British electorate would like to see exist in politics.
So, Katie, it seems strange to think that in 5 weeks' time we could have, you know, a Conservative majority, but a... And even if Labour doesn't do as bad as people think, even if they keep the Tory majority to about 50 or 60, they still will have the problem of Labour MPs who have got no confidence at all in the Labour leadership. They will not be able to offer any kind of coherent opposition. So do you think that after this election, we could be heading towards a peculiar and rather unstable time where there is no real opposition in Parliament, no real checks and balances, because checks and balances create stability. Without them, parties can gallop off in the wrong direction. So ought we to be concerned, do you think, about the collapse of Labour and also the apparent inability of anybody to come up with a solution to this problem?
Yeah, I think it's a risk. I mean, Tim Farron's been going around the country saying that the Lib Dems are the real opposition, but A, they're just not big enough, no. And two, it's just not convincing.
The Scottish National Party say the same, but they're probably going to lose about 5 or 6 MPs.
Exactly, and then they kind of just vote for their own names. It doesn't seem to me. So with Labour, I can't see. I mean, we saw in the last Parliament, I mean, lots of MPs who were frustrated with Jeremy Corbyn, like Yvette Cooper. What they've gone for is, you know, plum jobs on select committees, which is one way of, like, you know, holding the government to account. Mm. But it's not enough in itself. So I think it is a worrying time, and we might see some movement. But also remember, it could be actually some of the Tories who become Theresa May's biggest problem. I mean, she might still have a sizable majority, but I can see on both sides of the party, many MPs who won't be happy if she does kind of go softer on Brexit or go harder, or stuff like grammar schools.
And Isabel, if you were to guess, impossible I know, as to where the Labour Party is going to be this time next year, what would that guess be?
I think in terms of the Labour Party, a horrendous mess, lot of bitterness and resentment from both sides. I think in terms of the wider left, I think you might see new movements setting up. I can't see how the Lib Dems as an official party would be part of that, but I think you'd have certain Lib Dems who might be quite keen on a different moderate centre-left force in British politics. But as I said, these things take a long time.
Isabel and Katie, thanks very much. You can subscribe to and indeed rate this podcast, Coffee House Shots, in the iTunes store. And also, we've got a special offer we're running for the general election. £6 for 6 weeks full access to the Spectator website and all of our apps, 6 issues of the magazine, and you can claim that on spectator.co.uk/election offer. Thanks for listening. This podcast was produced by Nick Hilton.